Doug Christie.
He's a Hall of Famer, too, in my heart.
He's Jason Ross.
There's one Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Spend your afternoons with DC and Jay Ross on Sports 1140 KHTK.
Back here on Sports 1140 KHTK, Jason Ross, Doug Christie.
Yes, sir.
And what a pleasure.
I mean, an absolute honor. Yes.
Privilege, pleasure to be welcoming to the show Martin Luther King III joining us here, human rights leader. You know him, activist, socialism. Just, it's a true honor to have Martin Luther King III on the show with us now. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you guys are doing well also.
Yeah, we're making it do, right, Doug?
Yeah, we're making it happen.
Yeah.
How have you, let me ask you this, how have you navigated COVID? How has COVID been for you and your family?
Well, I think it's been difficult for everyone. I don't know of anyone who, you know, it has not been difficult up until maybe a month ago, maybe a month and a half. Our daughter was basically at home. Mm-hmm. And the whole school year, we changed schools at the beginning of the year, September, actually August. And it, she was very excited about changing, but when you're on a computer, it's very difficult to for kids to make friends in that way. They love to interact personally. So initially, it was great because we were sheltering, and we as a family, although we were already close, even became closer. But toward the latter part of the year, the school year, it became very challenging because, you know, as a 13-year-old, a 13-year-older wants to make friends and wants to interact. So I think it's going to be great next year. That's our story. And I don't want to really focus on us because there are so many people who we owe a great debt of gratitude to, because while we were very fortunate to be able to shelter, there were people every day who were going to stores to make sure that most of us in our society would have food. There were people who should be called, who are the heroes and heroines at hospitals, nurses and doctors who took care of so many of us. So, you know, when I look at my own personal situation, I'm certainly, we're wonderful. We're blessed tremendously.
You know, just hearing that answer from Martin Luther King III, obviously your father, your parents, very much about other people serving and thinking of others. That answer was that way. Is that just been in you since you can remember to always think of everyone else?
Yes, I would have to say oftentimes children emulate, not they don't always, but oftentimes you emulate your environment. So my environment with my mother and father, my father only 10 years, my mother many, many more. My mother passed in 2006. And so I had the distinction of being with her quite a number of years. But that's how they raised us. To be concerned about others, because as I say, I think part of that notion is to him or her that much is given, of him or her is much required, and so I've always felt that very deeply. And you know, I used to hear my father; he preached a sermon, and now the title of it does not come to mind. But one of the concepts he fostered was the concept of other preservation is more important than self-preservation, because in helping others to survive, we ultimately help each other. We help ourselves.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King III. I was reading something, Mr. King, and it was about your mom, and it said that she was apprehensive about naming you after your father because of the burden that it may have put on you. Your name is powerful. It is synonymous with so many incredible positive things. Did you feel any of that burden, and has it changed, if you did, into something different in your life?
Well, I would say that there certainly throughout life have been challenges, just as there would be for perhaps anyone else. The difference is I think my mother liberated me. And what I mean by that is she, when I was very young, not in elementary and high school, but probably maybe latter years of high school, she started telling me You don't have to go to Morehouse College as your father did. You don't have to become a minister as your father did. You don't have to become a civil rights leader. Just be your best self, wow. and we will support you fully. And so that was the liberation, because if I had awoken every day attempting to be my dad, I would have failed miserably. My mom used to jokingly say that Martin Luther King Jr. couldn't overcome who he is. In other words, he couldn't,
right.
because of how what he's become in our society.
Right.
He couldn't outlive that or overshadow that today. So, you know, what I'm grateful for was that liberation, that freedom that she gave me. And, you know, I had a lot of mentors throughout my life, and each of them would provide insight. But most importantly, it was my mom. I'd have to say, mother, she had the vision to realize. And when you think about it, they were in the midst of a campaign in 1955 to 56, which was the bus boycott in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. So although Dad was just becoming known, she could see that movement. Then, of course, I was born in 57. So this was after that movement. You know, he had been, on the cover of Time magazine and a number of things. So she knew instinctively, okay, I get that, you know, we want to name him Martin III, but this is going to be maybe a little challenging. So she saw that. But then, of course, as I said, she came back and helped me by giving me the foundation so that it wouldn't be overwhelming.
Wow. You know, Doug and I every day, we're a sports station. We talk sports. And there was a time that, you know, people would say, shut up and dribble and just talk about the game. That's gone. That's long gone. And activism in sports, you know, was maybe isolated to an individual, a couple of individuals, people that were a little more outspoken. But now what do you think about where sports is with not only individuals, but we'll see teams, we'll see leagues that have really gotten behind social causes. What do you think about that, the role of sports in kind of our societal issues that we have going on right now?
Well, I personally have always felt that activism through using one's platform, whatever it is good. And especially those who are athletes, whether it's football, baseball, soccer, tennis, golf, your platforms are so massive. The average one of us will never have those kind of platforms. And so if you can use your platform in a positive way, I think it's great. And it does not mean that you're not focused on your craft, whatever athleticism that you're engaged in, track and field and any other sport. I think that those voices have been very significant in helping to advance our nation. Although, unfortunately, there's still much progress that still needs to be made. We've scratched the surface some. I mean, when you look at, if you even just take what happened just a year ago in May 25th, the tragic killing of George Floyd. We've certainly made some advancements, but there still is a long, long way to go. And then I want to go specifically to, you know, the football, because of Colin Kaepernick and what he did by protesting, standing in a sense, standing up for justice. And yet, you know, he still was not allowed to be reengaged in the league or mm-hmm. for whatever the reason. The fact is, if you were trying to give someone something, you know, and certainly last season there were a number of positions available from a quarterback standpoint, and yet he still was not called back. And so that is a concern, because we all have the right to exercise, you know, that which we believe. And I don't think your standing up for something is going to diminish your ability to perform at the optimum levels in terms of your sport, your sporting capacity. So I still struggle with that issue. And I'm sure that there are others. But I think it's wonderful that we have athletes engaged. When you think about it, in the 60s, you had Muhammad Ali, you had late 60s, you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you had Bill Russell, and you had Jim Brown. And all these guys took very profound positions. Now, for a long period of time, you know, athletes didn't do too much. Some did. They've always been individuals. But, you know, collectively, there was not much done. Today, there seems to be more of a unification of athletes to stand up for justice.
Being it from Georgia, are you a Braves, Hawks, Falcons fan? Do you follow sports at all?
Well, I do. I do. I don't follow it enough. In fact, I'm going to the Hawks game. My daughter and I go into the Hawks game in the next few days. I used to be. In fact, when I was in high school, I was a basketball a slight player. I wasn't a great player, but I enjoyed the game.
Yeah.
So, and I've always for years enjoyed watching. You know, so obviously I'm because I'm in Atlanta, the Braves, the Falcons, the Hawks, the soccer team, all of those teams I watch from time to time.
Absolutely. Martin Luther King III, a question that came to me, and I have so many because your mother, Coretta Scott King, obviously Martin Luther King Jr. Do you think, and maybe you don't even know, your father would ever ran for president of the United States?
I think it is certainly could have been a possibility. On the one hand, you know, Dad was able to mobilize and create advancement externally. But at some point, there was a party, I want to say in 60, it wouldn't have been 64, it had to be 68, but Dad, of course, was killed. But there was a meeting in Chicago. Yeah, so that would have been 68. And this was a pre-meeting before, you know, Dad was killed. And there was a party that Dr. Spock, Benjamin Spock, was going to be the presidential candidate. And Dad was going to be or considering being his vice president. So my point is that, you know, as things advanced, perhaps he would have considered going down that pathway. But I almost feel like he probably would not have run for office. But I think that he felt that he could be more impactful and effective externally mobilizing people. But it's hard to know. All of this is speculative.
Yeah. I'm curious on that line, your thoughts when Obama had his 8 years in office, Harris now. I mean, that's land-breaking, you know, groundbreaking times. What was your view and your take on that?
So I always felt, I did not know, and I won't say that I was one of those who felt certain that President Obama would be elected, even though Dad and Robert Kennedy had predicted that America would have a black president. But it was more like 20 years from 68. It took a little longer, but that of course, occurred. So like everyone else, I was beyond thrilled at the election of President Obama, but I also realistically understood that his presidency, his being elected president, didn't resolve all issues around race. In fact, you know, we talk about a post-racial period. I'm not sure that ever has existed. Someday hopefully in the near future, we will get there, but it's not now. As we see, racism has appeared to escalate in our nation. I mean, we're having all kind of debates today around the theory of race, around the 1619 Project, and all of this is history. It is a one or some person's perspectives, but the fact of the matter is, until we acknowledge what has been done. And even in my, I'd go as far as some apology is owed. We're missing the mark. And the fact of the matter is, the president just the other day, I think, categorized the whole Oklahoma. I mean, when you think about Oklahoma was in 1921, and the whole area was just burned down, and people lost their lives.
Yeah.
Now that was 21. Just to give you a little note of history. If you look at the many incidents, not just Oklahoma, because around the same time, Rosewood in Florida occurred, and also Ocoa, Florida. And then you can go back to the 1800s. And so there have been several things. And then you can come up even to 1985. Some would even say, okay, the whole situation in Philadelphia with the organization MOVE, where a city went in and just burned the community down and people were killed. You know, this kind of behaviors has happened over and over again. And so the question becomes, you know, when do you, as a nation, say, you know what, these things are wrong? You don't harp on them. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to harp on them. But I do think you have to acknowledge that, yes, this is wrong, and how do we correct this, and how do we make our society better for all people, and how do we create options and opportunities? Because the reality is, you know, if you even look at just one economic indicator, and I'm only going to use one, there are many. But if you look at black wealth and white wealth, the average white family prior to the pandemic, you know, had about $175,000 saved up. The average black family, on the other hand, it was less than $15,000, $16,000. So there's the disparity that, you know, in 53 years, that hadn't changed. That was what it was. I mean, it was a little, the money was different, but it was the hugeness, you know, between $15,000 and $175,000 is significant. You know, shouldn't it, by 2021, should we be at like $100,000?
Right.
You know, so you could say, okay, we've narrowed this gap. But it doesn't mean we haven't made progress. It just means we still got a long way to go.
You know, Martin Luther King III, that leads me to progress versus change, whether it's Emmett Till, your father, now with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, your view of progress and change, because ultimately where we need to go, as you just mentioned, we are not there. Do we see progress? Yeah, we see progress. But just when you even mention financially, you can see that the change has not happened yet.
It has not. Now, what I believe is that, I think that over the next few years, and if people stay engaged, mm-hmm. you got to almost stay engaged. And I don't think young people are going anywhere. I was so proud of all the young people across our nation, black and white and Latino and Native American and even Asian American, who came together in every state in our nation after George Floyd's death and were protesting. Now, 89% of those protests were peaceful, but of course, you know, mainstream media focuses on the 10% that were not.
Yep.
And it's all, I think you got to acknowledge it, but the focus should be, look at all these positive things that people came together. My point is, I don't think young people are going to say we're going to go backward. I think, yes, we have a divided country. You know, 75 million people voted for President Trump's, 81 million people voted for President Biden and Vice President Harris. I don't think anyone is going anywhere. I would hope that we come to some kind of constructive, positive engagement and not negative engagement. Because as a society, we don't have to agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain principles that we have to agree on. My dad talked about a revolution of values. And, you know, sort of that's where we are now. We've got to have some changes. And I think that we're going to see a lot of things occur. I hope. I think good, bad, or indifferent, politics is involved for those who that's why I say good, bad, or indifferent. And I think every election cycle is important. You do have some people in our nation who are putting provisions in place to restrict the right to vote, as opposed to expanding. We need to be expanding the right to vote, and so that no one has any issues or encumbrances or slowdowns from being able to vote. And, you know, I think that there's a move in the country by some leadership, and I would say largely on the Republican side, to restrict the ability and the number of voters that are coming out. And I think that's not positive. I think that's not helpful. But I also think that people are going to stay engaged. And as we stay engaged, we will ultimately see real change. You know, the president can't get much of his, well, some of his agenda done at this particular point because it's a 50-50 United States Senate. And so, you know, we'll have to see what happens next year in the election cycle and whether or not the president is able to get more people who are Democrats elected. And I'm not advocating one or the other. I'm just saying that for his agenda, if people support his agenda, he's got to have more people who agree with him, or he's got to have Republicans who are interested in working with the administration. And at this point, it feels like most of the Republicans are like, well, we're not, we don't want to go in that direction. So we had a stalemate to some degree. But America will get past this. We always do.
Yes. Martin Luther King III, between yourself and your mother, the King Center in Atlanta, doing so many incredible things. What's new on the horizon? Just talk a little bit about that.
So my wife and daughter and I, and I have to speak about our daughter. She's 13, but she's an activist.
Okay.
Already. And she was, when she was about 8 years old, she spoke at the March for Our Lives just a few years back when tragically young people were killed in Parkland, Florida. And there was a march a year after where over 800,000 people came together to talk about responsible gun legislation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, again, we've not moved further enough yet. But I do think there will be some movement. But she also has been involved. We did a march last year, which was the 57th anniversary of the March on Washington, where Dad delivered the Eye of a Dream speech. So that was last August. And we brought together, in the midst of a pandemic, over 200,000 people.
Wow.
To talk about the importance of voting. And, of course, people, we are one of thousands of organizations that encourage people to come out and vote, and people did. And so we had a change in terms of, obviously, the president and electing our very first woman and a black woman and East Indian woman president of the United and vice president of the United States. So that all of that, you know, I think was very positive. But my higher point is I have been working with an organization called the Drum Major Institute. And it is an organization that my father actually founded with a gentleman in New York City back in 1961. The objective of the organization was Drum Major Foundation at that time was basically to raise money to bail people out of jail.
Mm.
After Dad died, the organization was somewhat dormant. But then back in 94, I came together with the co-founder of my father's lawyer's name, one of his lawyers, was Harry Wachtell. So I and his son, Bill Wachtell, came together along with Ambassador Andrew Young to create the Drum Major Institute.
Gotcha.
And through the 90s, it basically has been a New York-centric think tank, a progressive think tank. Last year, my wife is president of DMI. I'm the chairman of the board, and our daughter will be ultimately engaged around youth programming. And what we believe is we must work on addressing the vast inequities that my father talked about and he called them actually the triple evils of poverty, racism, and violence, eradicating those evils. The way you do that, we believe, is through the values of peace, justice, and equity. And so we are developing partnerships with a vast number of people in our nation and around the world to address these issues. I talked a little bit about the income inequality, but, you know, when you look at racism, when you look at violence, when you look at poverty in America, this is not, by the way, the organization is global, so the U.S. will be one aspect. It'll be a significant aspect. But we believe we have to create the capacity to communicate with each other. My dad talked about building the beloved community. And so that's what we're working on as we speak, my wife, daughter, and I, along with a whole team of people, so that we create a better America and ultimately a better world.
Well, I think everybody could appreciate that, that's for sure. I got to say, it's been a true honor and a privilege for us to catch up with you. We really thank you for your time and everything that you've done and continue to do. And certainly we want you to enjoy your time at the Hawks game.
Yes, enjoy. Go Hawks.
We're going to definitely enjoy that. Yeah, the Hawks are really, really doing well. I'm very proud of them. So we're going to enjoy that.
All the best to you and your family and to your daughter. Thank you. Incredible work. Thank you so much, sir. It was an absolute honor and privilege.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you. That is Martin Luther King III. And, you know, Doug and I have always said, you know, yes, we're a sports show, but we feel like we're more than that.
Yes.
And there's more to provide to this world. And some incredible insight. And I'm honestly, you told me before you were going to ask him about that. I had never thought about his dad running for president. And I don't know if that was ever his goal, because it seemed like it wasn't. But once it's hard to advance his life, what would the pressures have been? What would he have wanted to do? Because I wonder if that, if there was a possibility of that, if he could have done more good by not being in office. You know, it's,
I think
it's hard to
kinda
argue.
That's kind of what his son was saying, is like dad was kind of more mobilizing to maybe support somebody that was put in that position to actually do a lot of these good things that we're hoping and that we're talking about. But, man.
I never thought about that, though.
Yeah, big time stuff. Absolute honor right there.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Jay. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. That was Martin Luther King III. All right, Doug and I will take the break. We got more to come right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. You know what? No stopping all the dogs I'm dropping. It's Friday. Back here on Sports 1140 KHDK, Jason Ross, Doug Christie. Thanks again to Martin Luther King III.
Hey,
for joining us. Royalty on the show.
No doubt. That's how we do it.
That's right. This is how we do it. And Montel Jordan as well, earlier in the week.
Look at you.
Capital Casino now open again with their outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. All right, tonight in the NBA, Doug, we got a couple more series that continue. The East is about to start again with Atlanta and Philadelphia. They made their way through Philly. Now they're in Atlanta series tied at 1. What changes do you see tonight now that they're in Atlanta, or any changes?
Well, I think what we do know is this: if Joel Embiid is going to continue to dominate like this with a partial tear or whatever you want to say in his meniscus, he's just he needs some people to step up for him. That's going to be the big thing, because he's at 39 and 41 the first two games. Tobias Harris gives you 22 in the second game, but you're going to need some more. Seth Curry 21, Shake Milton. So, if you're going to get 20 from a couple players, Shake gives you 14. You get that's what you're going to need to be able to compete against them. I anticipate, though, that in Atlanta, this is going to be a rabid fan base. They are going to be ready. I would really anticipate it being a tough one for 76ers tonight, because I think that this is an Atlanta team that should come out in, I think, all guns a-blazing. That's kind of what I'm what I'm thinking there. I think Trae Young will have a better game in this particular one. I still think the 76ers might get this series.
Yeah.
But Atlanta, if they're gonna get one, this is the one.
I really liked the way Philly came out in the last game. Now, it didn't last long because Atlanta did a good job of staying with it. But the defense of Ben Simmons on Trae Young was really good. I mean, by the end, Young still got some numbers, but it was difficult for him to get to those numbers. I think Ben Simmons did a great job there.
Well, I think it's also like the adjustments. What does Nate McMillan do? Many times I've said to you, like, how you adjust and how you deal with pressure is dependent upon your teammates and them understanding basketball. Like, if you're going to get that up into somebody, I want to see that happen as a coach. But at the same time, there is a side B to that. Pass, cut, look for the contact, get to the free throw line, get in the penalty early, allow somebody else to start the game off, which is when we talked about Donovan Mitchell. It was surprising. Like, he's Donovan Mitchell for them. Trae Young is. Take him away early. Mm-hmm. Make those other guys. See if they can get hot and make something happen. So I would anticipate Trae Young and Nate McMillan trying to find a way to get him going early on.
We've seen Phoenix, let's say, for example, who we'll talk about coming up in a moment, but when they were at home in these playoffs, a team that I don't know that I think of the Phoenix Suns fan base as this rabid base, but it's been 10 years since they made the playoffs, and now they're going crazy.
Yeah.
Atlanta hasn't been known as that kind of market for their team, for their fans, and supporting the Hawks. So, Philly brought it. I thought those fans were great. I am anxious to see that fan element of Atlanta in round two against a good team, what the environment will be like.
I think it should be crazy. Not a lot going on. You got the Braves there, obviously. You're coming out of a pandemic. This is a young, exciting team that made it through the first round and kind of made a name for themselves against the Knicks. You go down, and now you got Trae Young. You've got yourself a game. You got home court. Can you take full advantage of it? And I think Trae Young, not social media, different things, not to mean, but a lot of times in Atlanta, they don't turn out the same way. They kind of put an edict out like, hey, we need you guys when we come back home. I would be surprised if Atlanta ain't hopping here in about an hour.
Yeah. Also tonight in that matchup, the one thing we talked about is Embiid, how dominant he's been. I don't know that I think of Capella as a great defensive player, but that's been more lopsided than maybe I thought it would be.
You mean like him beating up on?
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten him pretty good.
I would have anticipated that one.
Okay.
Yeah, listen.
I mean, he's going to do that to just about everybody.
Yeah, we've watched Clint Capella. He impressed me, actually, even playing against Rashawn Holmes. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, first of all, he's bigger than I thought he was, but okay, he's getting you 14 and 16, like 14 points, 16 rebounds, like consistently. And even in the last game, what did Clint Capella end up with? Okay, 10 and 8, yeah. Right. He's probably a little bit of foul trouble in there, only 28 minutes. Well, Joel Embiid, the one thing that you can say about him, it's good old-fashioned power basketball with him, with the ability to step to the three-point line, with the ability to handle it off the dribble. But he was dependent upon that the previous 5 or 6 years or whatever he's been in the league. However, Doc gave him the medicine to, hey, get down low, take full advantage of it. That's what he's doing, and Clint stands no chance. Mm-hmm.
Plus, the other thing for Joel is he's so good at getting to the line. What did he have? 16 attempts. I mean, that's such a weapon when you can get there and make a majority of them.
You know, oddly, there's some Shaq to him, but there's also some Tim Duncan to him. Because he kind of, you know, when he catches the ball on the block, you push him off 4 or 5 feet, and then he kind of reverse pivots. He'll get to an angle of the glass, but he kind of gives them the jab step like Timmy would do. Timmy would use the glass. He just shoots up and knocks it down. Now he's palming it and then going around like and looking to power dunk. Like, that wasn't necessarily Timmy. That was more Shaq, but he's got the size of Shaq, but then he's got the touch like a guy like Timmy. He is a – especially now that he's committed to going down low, he's about as dominant as a force as we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, he's been spectacular in the postseason. So that's Game 3 coming up with the Hawks and Sixers tied at 1. Game 3 in the West tonight is changing venues. They're going to Denver. The Nuggets have been overmatched so far. It's 2 games. We mentioned yesterday, Doug, about Coach Malone, ex-Kings coach, kind of going to the card again, like soft, we quit. Weren't ready, things like that. So if they're not inspired to start the game, then they have no chance.
The one thing about them is...
they have been resilient in the last couple of years.
I don't know that they have that edge to them. They're a more finesse team, pass, cut, move. He's asking them maybe to do something that ain't in them. I don't see Michael Porter Jr. as like getting in somebody's face like that. Murray, I could kind of see him getting at somebody like that a little bit. Jokic, he's not going to necessarily do it, but he ain't backing down. Jokic just looks to me like he'll get at you, but he's not setting a tone that way. And that's what you're going to need to do to the Suns team. Like, the teams that are having problems in the playoffs right now, they need to be more physical. They need to get up in somebody's face. They need to get after them and beat them, because you can't do that and then get the hell beat out of you at the same time. So I'll be looking for that in that game, in the Denver Phoenix game, is how do they come out based upon what you saw. And oddly enough, you and I talked about this. That's what I thought that Plumlee and Grant brought to them.
Yeah.
Plumlee was a physical. He would hit. He'd block shots. He's knocking people down. Grant, aggressive, long defender with physicality and edge to him. And they lost both of those players, and That is a thing. That's especially like if that's what's coming off your bench with Will Barton, like that's exactly what you need versus this Suns team right now.
Yeah, and I don't – the one thing you mentioned, the two guys that left, it does parallel or remind me a little bit of Portland when they had Al-Farouq Aminu and Harkless.
Like, yes.
That just – not their best players on their team, mm-hmm. but they needed them for a defensive identity, a defensive presence. Doug, here's some of the numbers they've given up this postseason. 123, 109, 115. They did have a 95-point game they allowed to the – nope, excuse me, they lost that game. They gave up 115. 140, 115 again. Then these two games in the series, 122, 123. Phoenix has been good defensively all year. I think they're the better defensive team. And when Jokic doesn't get enough of big numbers from Porter Jr. and certainly Gordon, I don't think they can count on their defense. So I think they're in trouble.
Oddly enough – and I've said this, if you listen to this show for a long time, before you and I were working mm-hmm. together, I thought that the Kings need to model a lot of what they do after Utah. Smaller market, that's a way. Phoenix has done that.
Yeah.
Phoenix, and they've convinced their number one overall pick, we're going to get you some points. Don't worry about that. You're going to get paid. But we need you defensively. And he's not Rudy Gobert. But DeAndre Ayton protects the rim, and he is a big presence on the interior. You got Bridges. You got these guys on the perimeter defensively. Like, Booker's not a great defensive player, but he is locked in similar to the way that you see Donovan Mitchell, meaning committed to the cause, and I'm in here working with you guys, okay? I am not Bridges on the defensive end, but I'm not, you know, hot butter at the same time, right? There's some substance to him.
Sure.
That is a thing for the Kings. Those are two models of what you can do in a smaller market.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, I have no doubt in my mind that the Kings, if they were in this opportunity, we would be seeing when people are talking about, man, Booker and Trae Young and Mitchell, Fox would be in that group. But until you get there, it's all talk. Until
yeah.
they get in that spot. And, man, that Halliburton kid's pretty good. He is. A lot of the stage doesn't know it until you're put on it.
Put some respect on the name, no doubt about it. And I thought in a lot of ways that's what De'Aaron did in the bubble mm-hmm. when you got a little glimpse. Then he came into the regular season, and all of a sudden he had that spurt of 30, 38. And I'm like, okay, well, that's what we're seeing with these guys. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing it in the playoffs tonight on national TV where everyone's at home. If you saw Foxy in that position – everyone will be like, oh, my God, the Kings have an incredible – well, yeah, we know that, but until they start smacking some people around, it's just us,
yeah,
you and I, well, and our listeners talking about it.
One of the guys I thought we would really be raving about this postseason, I thought that he would just really shine and thrive, was didn't. He wasn't terrible, but I thought Julius Randle would go off in this postseason.
It's interesting.
But he didn't. That's fine.
Well, he didn't pick up a right hand at 7-Eleven. You got to do that. Like, that was – he averaged 37 points against that team during the regular season. That's
wow.
– okay.
So that's an adjustment that was made, and they locked it down.
And they didn't adjust. That's what the playoffs educate you on, meaning that the regular season is different. You play me once on a Thursday night, and we don't see you again for a month. And do we read our scouting reports and we're ready? Yeah, but not the same way as we see you Monday, we see you Wednesday, we see you Friday, we see you Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a whole different deal. And each game
all
is
film,
its own
yeah.
everything. Well, the fact that they did not adjust at all, but at the same time, the Knicks had to go through that because they need to see who R.J. Barrett is. Okay, you're going to have to step your game up. You had to see who Randle was. Okay, you're not going to get a max contract. Like, these are things that needed to happen, and they did. That's a dang good point right there, sir.
Painful learning experience. All right, so the night in the NBA is about to get started with Philly and Atlanta. We'll keep you up to date on that. When we come back, we'll dip into some NFL conversations, some mini camps going on and wrapping up. Got some audio from the 49ers and some more things as we get you closer to 5 on it as well. And we continue with more right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.
Thank you.
Back here on Sports 1140 KHTK.
You were kind of into that.
I kind of was. Maybe too much. Probably too much for that, but I was.
Okay. Yeah, Gumby cut, Bobby Brown.
No.
560 SEC.
None of that. What
good,
I do have.
The good to go solo.
No? Don't be cruel.
If it's good enough.
Okay.
That's my prerogative.
You know what? Can I get to this? Every little step I take.
just tickles me. Moving on.
Grill, fire pit, outdoor heater, Cinch is the 100% answer for your propane needs. Cinch.com.
Jason!
You went to another level up there.
We have levels.
Way up there. NFL, we got we still got to wait a little bit before it gets truly going, but they're doing some different things right now, OTAs and different things like that. Let's hear Kyle Shanahan talk about his team.
Hey, Kyle, when you say you guys were having a clean camp, are you kind of done? Are you going to do any more OTAs, and is mini camp still going to go on next week?
No, we're totally done. We really finished up our exit meetings today, really, with everybody. We're still going to keep the rookies around here for a little bit, some more than others. I kind of decided a while ago we weren't going to do mini camp. You know, I rarely do mini camp. When we get 9 OTAs in, we usually do one practice, and then we have like a team building thing throughout that. And I decided earlier in this, if we could get our OTAs in, I wasn't going to keep them for mini camp because it's a week longer than usual. I like the guys to get away for 40 days, and we started a week later this year than usual. The whole league did, so they only would have gone away for like 32 days, and I think that does add up. So we had such a big turnout too. You know, and I know there was some question around a lot of people around the league, so I didn't know if we didn't have a big turnout, I obviously would have kept those guys because I know we had to get some work in. But, I mean, we really had 89 people show up to OTAs, which was unbelievable.
Well, the other thing that happened to them,
injure.
Too. Yes, two more injuries of guys that provided depth. You had an offensive lineman, Justin Skull, torn ACL, and safety Tavarius Moore, who had an Achilles injury, so he is out. And that's just, I mean, it is the nature of the sport, but they had rotten luck last year, and that's kind of the way it's starting this year.
Yeah, I think a little bit of that. Yeah, the 40 days, I get it, 32, 40, whatever. Protect the players from themselves sometimes. Obviously, did you see the Julio Jones tape, like him cutting and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, okay, you're really good at it.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Let's save some of these reps. Like, that's what's happening in some of these, just working on stuff, and guys are blowing up. It's unfortunate, especially for a team that is Super Bowl ready in 49ers to have these type of injuries. But if they have the depth, they'll be all right.
Yeah, you mentioned Julio. He was kind of asked about where he is now in his career.
For a guy who's 32 and people are ready to write you off, how are you feeling right now, and how do you expect to answer those folks?
At the end of the day, I believe in me. I know what I have in the tank. And we're talking about age is 32. I'm young. Like, in football, you can say it's old, but you either do it or you don't. This game don't change for me. I'm still fast and still strong. And to, you know, the games last year, I just, you know, had an issue where I didn't take enough time to heal up properly. But, you know, that was just my decision on going out there and just playing. There's no excuses, things like that. But I'll be ready to go. So for those who are questioning my health and things like that, just stay tuned.
Yeah, I think, again, age is a number, but I think it's how do you look at your age? And by that position, he can still move. He's still big, got the big catch radius. You mentioned the violent cutting and the ability he has to do there. Why won't he be good?
I think that he's going to be just fine. Where can they sell him on less is more? I think in the history of the game, he has the most targets per game. Wide receiver,
okay.
Ever. Or is it targets or catches per game?
Maybe even both.
It's like 8. And for him to go from that maybe to 4, I don't know, because now he's not number 2, but they have a really good receiver already. So
And
they want to run. Is he going to be open in that? I would say maybe even less is more. Like, you, maybe your career is a little longer because your catches aren't as many,
mm-hmm.
but they're even more impactful, maybe. Yeah. now you're going to be one-on-one coverage maybe because they're not going to be able to – or if they load the box up, then you're one-on-one, if or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And now they're running the football and no one's in there to mess with King Henry. This is going to be interesting to see how they call it and which way they go because you said it notoriously. They are a running team. But now they have an option in Julio Jones who's a viable option.
All right, let's last piece from the NFL. How about your team? There's a lot of talk about Russell Wilson. Did he want out? Was he going to be traded? Well, he's still a member of the Seahawks. Here's Wilson.
There's a lot of confusion because the reality is that I forget. I think I was in the Bahamas or somewhere, okay. And everybody was saying that I requested a trade, and that wasn't true. So we made it clear that I did not request a trade. And then there was teams being flown around that I was going to go to those teams, this and that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, when you look back at it, you know, it's part of, I don't know, it's part of it, unfortunately. You know, and I think that, you know, more than anything else, you know, that I got my wish, you know, in the sense that I've always wanted to play here. That's where I am. That's where I am right now. And that's what I've always hoped for ever since 2012 when I put all the names in a hat and pulled up the Seahawks out of a hat, you know. And then sure enough, about, I don't know, 30 days later, Seattle Seahawks picked me. So, you know, that's my mission. That's my goal. And that's why I'm here today and ready to roll.
I believe every word he said.
Oh, cut it out, man. He's my quarterback, and I don't even believe him. What's wrong with you, man? Come on.
That's just
where
that's you
where
wanted
I was
to
going. Yeah, no. I was going to say. Now you know he's lying.
Come on, what?
You got to clear things up. He was in the Bahamas, and this stuff just came out of nowhere.
You could have been in Jamaica, Bahamas, Antigua. I don't care where the hell you was at. But what I do know is I heard four teams that you were willing to go to.
They just randomly appeared.
Can't come home and tell mama, baby, I love you, but I got four girls on my mind. What? What?
He's,
come on,
he said he
man.
He got his wish. He always wanted to be there.
Once again, he could be in Key Largo, Montego. Bermuda, Bahamas, and some place called Kokomo.
Yes.
Cut it out, Russ. Don't take the mic. I mean,
that's
just
where he wants to go.
Just own it, man. It's all good. It's a profession. Whatever. I think that he was flexing his muscles a little bit. Mm. And the crazy thing is, like,
so everything's okay?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
Because I think that if we don't do all the things that he's thinking that we should do, Super Bowl, all these different things, we're going to be right back in this place next summer. And I think that his days in the Seahawks jersey may be numbered to this year. So hopefully we're able to, you know, get in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl like we
he's
should.
Done before. Yeah.
No, we should.
You should win the Super Bowl this
absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. That's come no. on. That's a what?
No.
No?
No. Not should. You could, but not should.
Why not should?
You're not the favorite.
I didn't say, you know, who's the favorite?
Kansas City, Tampa Bay, maybe.
Oh, you said Kansas City, huh?
Yeah.
Chris Paye?
Yeah.
I expect you to say yes.
All right. Final hour of the week is next. We have the crossover. We have Tell Me Something Good. We'll lead you up to A's and Royals, but next, it's 5 on it right here on KHDK.